Is that a... You silly sod!
Welcome to NC Gum Bunnies, episode 15.
Is it episode 15 already?
Yep, episode 15 already.
Are we only like, what, two episodes behind them, behind them Killbox guys?
Yeah, it seems so.
Okay, well, that sounds good.
So, for Gum Bunnies podcast today, we have a few things. We have, we're going to have our news. We are going to be having Renth on to talk about his games at Mace West.
Yep. We also have Andy on talking about some of his games and his master games at Crucible.
Excellent, excellent. All right, so let's go up into the Rule of Gazette. All right, so for the Gazette today, we have... Let's go through tournaments first.
Can't we just skip this section? I mean, there's nothing going on this week.
This week? Or there's nothing going on this week?
Well, I mean, in the near future.
In the near future? Okay, let's go over the near future. So let's talk about tournaments. The 12th, we have a... Invitational tournament at Atomic Empire. The Live and Let Die tournament.
Are you going to that?
I don't know yet. It's on the same weekend as GnomeCon.
I know. And you sure are ducking GnomeCon, so you may as well go to that.
That's fucked up. You may not be going to GnomeCon either.
Well, yeah, but I'm not admitting that.
Okay. The week after that, there's another Carolina Invitational at Game Theory 419. That'll be, and I'll be helping run that event.
Sweet. Then I don't have to worry about you putting damn Kriyas in the damn game just for me.
I just got to make sure Tyler's there.
Screw that.
All right. So in Greensboro at Gamers Underground, they have a free play day coming up the 6th. I guess that should have been before the others, but that's this weekend. Free play, Greensboro.
Only if we're doing things chronologically.
Which apparently I was doing things by area, so I guess we're doing it like that.
I guess so.
All right, speaking about from area, at least this one's chronological, is at Game On in Chattanooga, Tennessee, May 18th, Who's the Boss? 50-pointer.
Sweet. That'll be mentioned actually also later in the cast.
It will also be mentioned later in the cast, but we are happy to welcome our... brothers from Tennessee onto the Gum Bunny site.
Sweet.
All right, let's talk about conventions. So, first convention is coming up April 11th through 13th in Savannah, Georgia, GnomeCon. That is the one you're claiming that I'm ducking while you don't know whether you're going or not.
That's true.
Okay. Just making sure there.
I'm about 85% sure that I'm going.
All right, so let's talk about this Gum Bunny circuit here. All right, so... June 20th through 22nd, StormCon in North Charleston, South Carolina.
I thought you didn't know anything about this.
What do you mean?
Well, I talked to you about it yesterday, and you're like, I don't know anything about StormCon.
I apparently had it on my thing.
This is why we write things down.
This is why we write things down, so we remember things. All right, the following weekend... June 27th through 29th is Con Temporal in Raleigh, North Carolina.
That's going to be a hard one to make. It's kind of a drive.
Yeah, it is right down the street.
Oh, well, yeah. That too.
So apparently they're having, you know, guests, War Machine, burlesque. So all good things to go to.
I'm going for the burlesque.
Okay. That seems fine. I think M will go along with that one too.
Sure. I'll take your wife. It'll be a date.
No. And the following weekend, which is why we're calling this the Gun Bunny Circuit, is GigaCon, July 4th through 6th, Marietta, Georgia.
Well, that's right down the road.
Yeah, right down the road.
Yeah. It is July 4th weekend, though, so...
That's going to suck.
Yeah, for you, because...
I don't actually think I can get it off.
Yeah, that's a problem. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Yep, we sure will. But those are the cons coming up. Those are the tournaments coming up. So that is the Gazette. Do we have any other news?
I don't know. Maybe I'll be sick that weekend.
Sick that weekend?
Yeah.
Sick the weekend, the write-up weekend?
The July 4th weekend.
The write-up weekend is what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the write-up weekend.
Yeah. That's the one. Yeah. You need a new job anyways.
I may need a new job, but that doesn't mean I have one.
That's true. Your wife can support you.
She could, but it would not be good.
It would be just fine.
Okay. We have an RSS now, if y'all hadn't seen it. We had that whole thing set up. Mr. Damaris was very, very nice with that.
Yes, he was.
So that is the news.
Well, and I also want to give a plug to the Muzon Mini store. They've been coming out with a lot of really awesome templates and tokens recently. If you haven't been by there, check it out. The last time I saw that, they had the Signar tokens up. But then I checked the next day, and the Signar tokens were sold out. So they look really sweet. They look, they're very nice, very well done. Check it out. See what you have for your factions. By now, they may have more. By the time this drops, they may have more of the faction tokens out. And check out what they've got, because they really do look pretty sweet. So
I saw the preview ones for the Scorn.
Oh, did you?
Those look fantastic.
Yeah, they really look sweet. So check it out. See what they have. They're going to be updating their store much more regularly, so stop by and check them out.
All right, that's the Gazette signing out.
Signing out. We're here today with Andy, and he's going to talk to us about some of his games at Crucible, continuing with some of our Crucible coverage. I'm going to let him take it away.
Okay, so round one, I went up against Menoth, and it was a guy... For the record, if I didn't write down your name, there's no way I'm going to remember it. Even this guy who I'd met at Mace...
He didn't write down anybody's name, so he doesn't know anybody's names.
I just didn't think I had to talk about the qualifiers. It's written down somewhere in my house.
Sure.
I've met this guy multiple times, and he's awesome. And he plays Menoth. And he dropped Fiora 2 against me, and I dropped Saren, because I love Saren, so she's like my default caster.
I don't know. I only ever see you drop Epic Veil. So.
It's because you play Signar, so...
Whatever.
No, see, everybody gets Saren, and then other people get specialty casters, even though Epic Veil is sort of a generalist. But regardless.
Yes, I feel special. So what you're saying is I should feel special that you're not dropping Saren against me.
I wouldn't. Yeah, you and your siege list, Saren's not so hot against that. But
well, she's not very hot against Epic Haley either.
Yeah, but she is fantastic against Epic Fiora, even though Epic Fiora has gotten. So his Epic Fiora list was Adjudicator, a Reckoner, the full-on... bomb people, zealots with the UA and all that jazz, and then some supporting cast and some Daughters of the Flame in it too. And there was probably some other things, but
Daughters of the Flame? Yeah. Are those the ones on horses?
No, they're the ones with two little swords.
Okay. The Flamebringers.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I think they're Daughters of the Flame.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, whatever. They're good. I love
they
them.
Are. They're
whenever
good.
I play Menoth, I love them. They're speed 7, mat 7, I think, with auto pointed damage and two swords. They're fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, they're great against infantry, but they don't really do fantastic against heavy targets.
Yeah. All right. So I won the roll to go first in this one. I advanced pretty quickly up the board, as Legion is wont to do, but basically kept everything in an annoying spot, behind a wall, up on a hill, in a cloud. I should point out that this map was... it was a pit in the middle, so it was like raised all along the edges, and then the pit was about a 2-foot in diameter circle. And we decided that everything else around it was a hill, and the pit was just the normal terrain.
Right.
And then there are kind of walls circling around it, and there are some walls down in the pit too. So Saren basically positioned herself in a wall in the pit, so she was unkillable because she's Saren. So, you know, that's defense 23, so yay. He was actually on a hill behind a wall in the pit, so she was, I don't know, I don't think they were thinking that quite through when they designed that terrain, but she was unshootable.
Yeah. Well, yeah, all you have to do is slam something over and then shoot.
Yeah, you can't through the wall, though, it's fantastic.
Or two-handed throw then, or whatever.
He deviates off of her. No, he never got within a country mile of Saren, but he did advance pretty quickly out of the gate, too. I think he was worried about losing on Scenario, not that I can remember which one this was. It was not a big circle or square one, so it was like a flag and objective one. But
it was Destruction.
Oh, okay. All right, so it was Destruction. I think he was worried about losing on Scenario, which is a legit concern, but he moved his Zealots a little bit too far forward, so I moved a Strider Deathstalker forward and attempted to pop the UA who was just sitting out there. But Strider Deathstalker hit and then rolled like an 11 on damage, not an 11 AM, and rolled terrible on damage and did like 2 damage to it. So it triggered his plus armor. Or no, it didn't, but I can't remember. Either way, it didn't kill it, and I was bummed out. So plan two was to take a shredder, rabbit it, run it straight at the zealot dude, and then just blight bomb it, which is what I did. So I killed the UA before he got to pop the feet.
Oh, that's nice.
The zealots, and killed a decent number of zealots too. The other Strider Deathstalker killed some daughters because it's good at that. And Saren sat behind a wall. I put forth the beasts. Basically, he moved up the Judicator and the Reckoner and ineffectively shot at things. I charged in, killed stuff, popped the feet. Which is super good with Saren. I had the game won at that point. It wasn't
You weren't worried about the adjudicator burning all your stuff down with its guns or anything like that?
No, he basically lobbed a bunch of shots with the adjudicator at Saren, and he was actually out of range for it, too. So
he was basically hoping just to drift on her and light her on fire.
But I had transfers, so the chances of Saren dying at this point are non-existent.
Right.
But, you know, it was a legit try. I ended up blowing up the adjudicator. I actually blew up everything and then scored 5 control points. And killed Epic Fior for the maximum amount of tiebreaker.
Did I ever tell you you're a terrible person, Andy?
I didn't even do it on purpose.
I really didn't.
He stuck Fiora behind adjudicator and stuck everything else up front, so I had to kill everything before I could get
to Fiora. You had to do it.
So I did that. All right, so round two is the one. I can't remember if it was round two, but I've forgotten one of my matches, and I think it was round two. So if you're the person I played in round two, I apologize. Yeah, so round three, it was Epic Haley. This is one of the things I'm trying to avoid as I attempt to avoid trolls and Signar, but, you know, I have decent matches against them, namely Vale.
Vale 2 specifically.
Yes. So I get the roll to go first because I have +1. Yeah, sorry, Epic Vale tier 4. So that list you see everywhere, that's what I was playing. I'm not creative.
You just want to play what works.
I've been playing the exact same list with Saren and Vale for the last year and a half in an attempt to get good with those lists. So other people can be creative and come up with new and innovative strategies. I've found two that work just fine and cover pretty much all the matches, and we'll just go ahead and do that. So, I mean, it is the caster pairing from heaven. So
yeah, it does cover pretty much everything you'd want it to. There's no really bad matchup I don't think you can run into.
Runes of War. That's really? About it. Runes of War is hard on Saren.
What about Vale?
Vale's not a huge fan of it either. Honestly, it's too much for her to punch through, in my opinion. And Purification is really good. Not to mention Doomy's got Rampager and an amazing feat against that list. So I hate Runes of War, which is why I have a new Thangrush here. But we can talk about that later.
We'll talk about that afterwards.
Anywho, he's playing Epic Haley. And so my plan is to scenario. So this is the one with the big circle on one side and the little flag on the other.
That's a round two.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
All right. So round two, I played. And then there's the two objectives. All right. You know.
Because this is the round I played Corey.
Oh, okay.
I lost to Corey in round two.
All right. Well, in this round, I played Signar. I guess I lost in round two. Man, what a bummer.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because we did both lose at the same time.
Oh, did we?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, we've given away the ending. It's a spoiler alert. So I can't really say that after I've spoiled it, I guess. Anywho, so my plan in this game is to play scenario and hopefully force Epic Haley out into the open because she can't get in the big circle. He basically, he centers all his forces on the big 12-inch circle.
Right.
And then
not a bad plan.
So I skew towards the objective and attempt to win that way. And I put stuff in the zone. He blitzes Stormwall into the zone, you know, and pops the feet. Which is surprise. So I basically spend the turn killing other things and dinging up the Stormwall a little bit, but don't really do too much. And then I skew my forces towards the left side of the board in order to get at the flag over there. And so my goal is to jam up that zone and then start scoring and hopefully keep him far away. And he really doesn't have anything on that side of the board, so he's forced to do things in order to keep me from scoring points. In the end, Stormwall goes. He kills some of my guys. He kills angels, basically. And
angels are good things to kill.
Yeah. It turns into a war, but my plan is basically going the way it should be. And every turn, he runs like a gun mage or Epic Eris or something over there to... And Epic Eris just barely squeezes in, by the way. That was sad. He runs over to contest my flag.
You're complaining that you basically got a free Epic Eris?
Oh, no, I didn't. I won. He had to run her over, otherwise I would have been at 4 control points and 1 at that point. So he has to start jamming up that zone every time, but he can't afford to put anything.
You mean the flag?
I know, I'm good at these.
Yeah, I can tell.
So he's got to jam up that flag, because if I score on his turn, that's way bad. But he doesn't have anything strong enough to actually survive sitting over there. And what's over there is essentially 2 Ravagors and various support groups. Basically 2 Ravagors. So nothing, and Vale, who's personally able to kill stuff too if she really wants to. So the Ravagors are sitting over there peppering various things, gun mages, killing stuff that walks over into the zone, killing the Black 13th who came over to contest on it. he's basically forced to take Haley out from behind her wall, and he basically positions her in the very back corner of the zone in a hope that basically Vale can't get to her. And he camps one or two. I think it was one.
I think it was one as well.
All right. So it's like, oh, okay, time for a Vale assassination.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. That's why I don't like to play Epic Haley against Vale.
So to be fair, he knew what was coming. He was a really good player, and full credit to this guy whose name I've forgotten. But
I believe he actually lives in Tennessee.
Oh, okay. Well, he was great. I loved him. It was a fun game too. He basically plan works, but there is a flaw in this plan in that as soon as he moves Haley into that zone, he can clear it really easily and he dominates it, which means he's scoring more points since you get 2 points for dominating the zone and you get 1 point for dominating the flag in this scenario.
Right.
So she's out in the open, but he's going to win quickly. So she's out, but win now or lose. So I basically move a Ravagor over. It has to run to get into position to act as an arc node. I then have to charge something else. I forget what it was, but it was it was a shepherd. That's right. She charges a shepherd, buys an attack on the Ravagor's rear arc, uses it as an arc node, and then puts two fully boosted a blitz into Haley. So Haley's a defense 16, armor 14?
Yes.
So she's a 16-15 at that point, which
yes,
means
straight dice.
Eights to hit and straight dice. So...
So two should probably kill her. Yeah. I think she's only got 15 or 16 hit points. So.
However, only one hits, because I don't roll an 8 on one of the things, and then it does terrible damage. But luckily, I still have a Ravagor. So the Ravagor walks over, the Ravagor hits her, also on straight dice, boosted, does terrible damage, lights her on fire, and then she burns down to 2 HP and lives, and he wins.
Ugh. So
it was
tight one, though.
Sad. Yeah. But it was definitely...
A calculated risk.
Yeah.
He was all in at that point? Is that what
you're
saying?
I mean, he was all in, but I was all in too. Like this is, the game is going to be won or lost this way. And he was out of range for Icy Grip. I couldn't get the Ravagor within 8 inches of
Haley.
So that would have made her defense 14, which would have made one of them probably not miss. So, because you need sixes to hit, and that's almost trivial.
Yeah, on three dice, it's pretty.
Yeah. Yeah, that happened. So that was sad. But. Not the end of the world. I should also add that she had to lose an extra fury to buy an attack with her Araculus after charging the back of the Shepherd.
Yeah, so what'd you do? You gunfightered? She has gunfighter?
No, she's got...
Does she have Virtuoso?
No, she's got gunfighter. Vale 2 has gunfighter.
Right.
And it's the same weapon, so she can buy an additional attack.
Because she's using the gunshot as her weapon. And you can charge with gunfighter.
Yeah. So. And there actually was some confusion about that at first, where he said, you can't buy that range attack after you charge. And then I was like, oh, I lost. And then my brain kicked into motion. I was like, no, I play this caster constantly all the time. I can attack.
Yeah, because that's what Kane 2 does.
Yeah.
Or what Kane 2 can do. He can charge his own model. Mm-hmm. Like, I've done this before, where you charge, you run a model... Exactly 10 inches away from Kane, or 10 and a half, if you like, because Kane speed 7, so he charges 10 and a half, and then he gunfighter shoots his own guy in the back, and then after that, then since he's not engaged, since it's his own guy, he can then continue to use gunshots.
Yeah, it's definitely good.
Right.
That's what happened. So I lost. I'm 1-1, and I'm feeling all bummed out. Then I guess I forgot who I played in round 3. Or maybe I played the Scorn player in round 3. Anywho.
I think you played the Scorn player in round 3.
Okay, then I'm pretty sure you did. I played in round 4. Anywho, round 3, I think it was 3-flag. You're the one who knows all the scenarios.
Round 3 was 3-flag.
All right, so that was the Scorn player. So round 3 is 3-flag.
You're making me work here.
You have to earn your podcast. He's got Epic Hexeris. I think he has Tubby. No. He's got Sergeant Clubs.
Xerxes.
That's it. So he's basically got two heavy infantry lists. Hexeris is rocking the incendiary and a significant beast brick. And I dropped Saren because he's got no ranged attacks in the army. So, you know, it always makes Saren feel good. Beforehand, I should apologize to this guy because he got a little annoyed at me halfway through the game. And it was slightly legit. I was probably rushing and I was flustered because I'd lost a game beforehand, but
don't worry, Andy. We already apologized to all the players that had to play against you in a previous podcast.
Oh, did we?
Yes, we did.
Oh, I'm friendly. The only person I stole a game from was
the troll player.
The troll player. Poor troll. I feel bad.
I felt bad.
Anywho, I had put down I think it was a tenacity. Maybe it was an upkeep or respawn or something. Anywho, I'd put down the token, but he hadn't actually heard me say it, so. And then he was a little confused about what was going on, and I clarified that this token means that. I think he found it hard to follow me at times, so I definitely needed to slow down and enunciate my words, so I apologize, Mr. Scorn Player, whose name I forgot.
I believe his name is Matt.
I apologize, Matt. Anywho, he drops Epic Exeris. I played a decent amount of Scorn, although not recently, because Tyler hasn't been playing in the last couple months.
I know. Well, but, you know, he got that job where he works nights, so it's hard.
Jobs.
I know.
Job sucks.
It's really unfortunate, because I really enjoy playing against Tyler.
Yeah, he's a real solid player. He doesn't really play Epic Exeris that much, if ever. So
he plays them against me just because I have, like, you know, 10,000 infantry models on the table. And he's like, oh, well, my bronze back's down to 3 hit points. I guess I'll heal it all back up by charging through your guys.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Anyway, the core of his plan is to basically put a brute in the middle of the field with Ashen Veil on it and brick up next to the brute in order to give everything the -2 strength if I want to target something that's not the stupid brute.
Ashen Veil? I thought Ashen Veil gave concealment.
Yeah, and -2 strength. -2 to attack to all living models within 2 inches.
Yeah, you -2 to attack. Okay.
You wouldn't know this because you're a Signar player, but...
Yeah, we just shoot.
Yeah. No, it also gives the -2 within 2 inches. So basically, he forces me to go for the brute unless I want to be swinging on everything at a -2, which I don't. And he's got an agonizer in there for more fun, and then he's also got another -2 strength, I think. Oh, yeah, because he's got a
I'm sure cannoneer. He's got a Kriya. Oh,
he's
yeah,
got
he's
got a cannoneer. So it's miserable. His whole point of his list is just to subtract all of my stats everywhere. So,
hooray.
Sounds great.
Anywho,
I'm glad you played against it and not me.
I skew to the middle with Saren. He moves, but I do math and therefore position my army where it's not going to be initiated on by him. I've gone second, by the way.
Oh.
So he moves his army up. I move my army up, but out of his threat ranges with math, which is not that hard to do, actually, against this list. Then we find out which flag goes away. The left flag goes away. He advances more centrally, and then I skew heavily to the right, basically. And the game basically devolves into nobody can kill anything because his list is miserable, although I do end up killing the brute and the shaman and stuff like that. In the end, not much dies, but I dominate the flag.
The one on the outside. The ones on the outside you dominate for two.
Yeah,
as opposed to the... In the middle, you either control or dominate for
and
one.
And he can get some incendiary in there the next round, but I have 2 Angeliuses and a Scythian over there, so it's not very difficult to kill the remaining incendiary.
Well, it's not even just that. I mean, you can just, if they walk into the zone, you don't even have to necessarily make attacks with the angel piece. You could just repulsion them away.
Yeah, I don't really want to do that, though, because I'd rather have them dead.
Right, but I mean, if you're
well,
just
actually, what ends up
dominating
actually,
for two is
I think,
pretty
I
quick.
I think Saren ended up repulsing some of them away. But basically, I put Breaststealer on things that might be able to get near my flag, which are his beasts. And I think he's got a bronze back in this list, but I'm not completely positive. There was a cannoneer, and I'm pretty sure there was a gladiator. There was a brute, and there was a shaman, and there was a unit of incendiary.
It's a lot of stuff. Yeah. No, Satrati? No. Shield wall guys?
No.
No.
But I think Sergeant Puffy Pants was in the list, so...
Sergeant Puffy Pants?
Whatever his name is. Marketh, that's it. So Puffy Pants, I think, was in this list, but I'm not positive. I basically zoned him out of the flag and used Saren to win on Serial.
Did he try to take the central flag at all or anything like that?
He did, but I had Saren feeded the turn before and then had beasts in there. 2 Scythians and 2 Angels, so.
So you were contesting the central one?
Oh, yeah. And... I don't think he actually ever scored a point.
Oh.
But he did do pretty well on attrition. It was just my attrition... I knew that he could either kill my guys or get towards the zone, and I would much prefer him to kill the guys, because then I went on scenario.
Right.
So, that happened. And now is the round I forgot, I guess.
Yeah.
But I won.
Let me think, what was round 4? Round 4 was 2 zones. Okay. They were the long zones, and they were offset.
Yeah.
And then there was 2 objectives in the middle.
I played a... The Evad player in Masters in that scenario, though, so I can't get that out of my head. Oh, no! I know what I played!
Haha.
Oh, my goodness, randomly remembering things. It was a Menoth player.
Another Menoth player.
Yes, and he was playing Resnik. I don't remember what his other lists were, but I remember being a little surprised that he decided to drop Resnik against me. He was running a, it was a Jack. It was the Jacks. It had a Reckoner, and then it had another Jack. A Vanquisher, I think. I think it was a Reckoner and a Vanquisher for Jacks. It had 2 of the battle engines, and it had a pretty character-heavy minion loadout. So I think Kel Balak was in there. I think Eris was in there.
Which Eris? 1 or 2?
I think it was 2. but I'm not positive. It might not have been. The main feature of the list was the two battle engines and the Reckoner, and I think it was a Vanquisher. It was definitely a Reckoner in there.
Well, maybe he thought you were going to drop Saren against him and he wouldn't have enough guns to shoot you.
I did drop Saren against him because I love Saren. So
did he have enough guns to shoot you with?
He actually got really good damage rolls, if memory serves. And he killed a lot of guys from range. It just wasn't enough.
Because two battle engines, that can put out some damage.
Oh, yeah. He had some mechanics in this list because mechanics are good with that battle engine.
Yes, they are.
So basically, what happens is he flanks on either side with the battle engines and he moves the rest of his forces up the middle. And remember, there being infantry of some sort. They were steelheads. That's it. He had steelhead pikemen in it.
Steelhead halbs?
Yeah, yeah.
That's strange. Yeah. It seems like Menoth wouldn't really use the steelheads as much. Their infantry is really good.
Yeah, they were, but he had a reasoning for it, too, and it was pretty good reasoning, like we talked about it. I remember thinking, oh, that makes sense. And it wasn't bad, honestly. They were fast. They got in the zone. They flanked around pretty hard.
They do. Their mats kind of meh, unless they're charging. They do have CMA, and they do have reach, which is really nice.
Yeah.
But Zealots seem like they would be better in almost every way.
I killed them a lot. Because I can kill
they
Zealots
die
too.
Really easy.
I can kill Zealots all day too, because Saren's good at killing them. But anyway, I've got the I have Strider Deathstalkers, so.
And not only that, but you have the Blight Bomb too, or whatever.
Yeah,
and you just jump a rake in the middle of them, and they all die.
There's no rake in this one, actually. I've been running
no rake in Saren.
No, there sometimes is with my list, but this one's actually got a Harrier and a spawning vessel. It's a little bit different than a lot of Saren lists.
Sure, but a Harrier can fly in there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's the idea. A Harrier actually can sometimes get itself in weirder places than a Rake because it can charge 10, sprint 7. So.
Right, and then you can just blight it up.
Yeah, which but it basically depends on if you need to get in the middle of things and avoid the free strikes. I may go back to a Rake just because the leap is nice, and a Rake is an amazing war beast that doesn't get enough credit for what it can do.
Yeah, it really does. It does a lot of work. I mean, having jump on the Fury system is much better than having jump on the Focus system.
Oh, yeah. Way better.
Yeah.
Although the Rake, it's kind of meh as far as damage output goes. It's got a POW 11 and a POW 12 for a 4-point beast, so. It's not going to kill anything big, but it's a good solo hunter. My only issue with it as a solo hunter is it's only mat 6, so it often has trouble hitting things like Eris or...
Right, but it can boost.
Yeah.
So, that helps.
It does, but Harriers automatically hit. And I can make them out of spawning vessels, which means they threat even farther.
That's true.
So, I prefer Harriers for solo hunters. I think the Rake may have a place in the list. It's just, I'll experiment a little bit more. Maybe I'll play a Rake this weekend instead of the spawning vessel and the Harrier. Anywho, I was happy with the Saren list, and it's honestly a minor tweak. The Korra list is the terrible twos. So, the two Angelias, the two Forsaken, the two Scythians, the two Strider Deathstalkers. I actually have 3 Spell Martyrs, but usually it's 2. So it at its core, it's the terrible twos. It's just the terrible twos with a tweak. Basically, what ends up going down is he brings the Jacks up the center and flanks on either side with the battle wagons, which is reasonable because they don't need to be in Resnik's control area, which is smaller than some. Essentially, I focus heavily on his zone, the one that I can dominate for more points.
Right.
So friendly, you dominate for one, enemy, you dominate for 2.
Yeah, but the other thing, too, is you can control the enemy one for one, where you can't control the friendly one at all for anything. You just contest it.
And I went second because Saren's got a heavy scenario place, and I actually really enjoy going second with Saren. I actually don't mind it with Vale either.
I really enjoy going second just in general because I do like to pick the matchups for my infantry. Since I run a lot of infantry, you know, it allows me to...
I don't think second gets enough credit. I pick it a lot even when I have the choice. Also, if terrain is heavily skewed, then it's almost a no-brainer. So I dropped Saren, and this was not a terrain skew environment. The terrain at Crucible is actually very sparse.
It's unfortunate, but I mean, they had a lot of tables, so...
Yeah, I understand what their problem was. They just didn't have enough terrain to go around a 40k tournament, a fantasy tournament, and a War Machine tournament. But what ends up going down is that on my turn when I'm trying to score, I end up bringing the battle engine down to 1 HP. Remember being sad about that and popping Saren's feet. I think he ended up shooting an Angelius off the table, which was unlikely, if memory serves, but the Reckoner rolled certain damage.
I don't know that that's unlikely if you can put two of the battle engines
It wasn't 2 battle engine shots.
And a Reckoner.
I think it was just a Reckoner and a battle engine shot and maybe some other stuff, but I honestly can't remember. Anywho, I remember thinking that it was unlikely, but it happened. And then it happened again. I think he killed a Scythian the turn after that under Saren's feet. But basically what goes down is I dominate the zone. He moves things into the zone, and then I killed him and I dominated again. And then I think he actually ended up using Engine of Destruction with Resnik and putting him in there, trying to kill as much as possible. And then I just killed Resnik and dominated the zone for more tiebreakers. So...
Well, tiebreakers are good.
That might have, anyway, he ended up getting a lot of attrition on me. I had the scenario game. Yeah. And then round five was trolls, which is my worst nightmare. I hate trolls.
Even more than Signar.
Even more than Signar. Well, trolls is the definition of a grind out match, and trolls have P. Doomy, who is amazing against Legion, especially the way I run Legion, which is without an infantry list. So
yeah.
He is absurdly good, especially alongside Rampager. The feat is amazing. Purification is ultra important, so...
yeah, that Thags list probably doesn't want to see P-Doomy across the table.
Actually, the Thags list just beat it yesterday. That was P-Doomy.
Yes, but...
I think the Thags list actually has real game against P-Doomy. We can talk about it later. Aggressive really lends a lot to the lesser charge, and they don't have to spend the Fury and still can be perfectly effective, especially against lower defense models and trolls. So it works pretty decently. Anywho,
I think that all that Fury spending would cause you to take a lot of damage.
Yeah, you don't spend the Fury is the thing.
Oh, okay.
They have aggressive, so they charge for free.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying.
So you can get stuff done, and the feat is not a complete time walk, whereas against a lot of Legion lists, it's either a death sentence or a time walk. You either put yourself in a scenario where you're gonna win and it doesn't matter how much damage your beasts have, or you time walk it, and you're ultra conservative with them. So, this is against a standard Runes of War list, and I drop Saren because he's got more game than Vale, in my opinion. He drops a Runes of War with the four units of
Rune Shapers,
that's it, a Dire Troll, Mauler, a Clyde, and Mulg, alongside a stone in the back. You know, very standard Runes of War. And then he proceeds to destroy my list.
Like, yes, he does.
Like, take it apart. I can't do anything. The walls, everything has just gone wrong. I can't score scenario points. I think I get two. I do get two scenario points, which...
I don't know how you did that.
It ends up being very important, actually, that I get those two scenario points. I jammed them out with the feat. So I scored, jammed, feated, scored a point after that when I cleared whatever he used to get in to stop me from scoring again, which I think was some Rune Shapers. Anyway, he proceeds to destroy my list. So near the end of the game, I have Saren... I have Forsaken, and he's got all his beasts. He's got Clyde, who's pretty dinged up at this point, but from some poor dice rolling, I didn't manage to kill with the Scythian.
Clyde is the Earthbreaker, yeah, for those that don't know.
Earthborn,
sorry.
Yeah, Earthbreaker's that thing with guns.
That's true. I remember I walked by your table after my round four, and I don't know... Was this round five? This was round five? Yeah. After I was finished with my round five, which my round five was pretty quick, and I walked by your table because you were playing on the edge of one of the tables. Like, on you know, because those tables were real long, and you had, what, four or five different games or six games per table.
Yeah.
And you were on one of the edges. So I walked by and I looked, and all I saw was Saren
and a Forsaken.
I know. Well, it was Saren and a Shredder, and I didn't see the Forsaken.
There was still a Forsaken in life.
And I was like, that's it. And the other guy was playing trolls, and he had like
everything.
Like his whole list was still there. I was like, I walked over to Will and I was like, this doesn't look good for Andy. Yeah, so, I don't think he's going to win this one.
So I got crushed, and he played really well. So he's playing Runes of War the way you're supposed to play Runes of War. And he's playing it well. He's not making mistakes. It's, you know, he's also 3-1, so he's trying to qualify for Masters too. So as soon as all of my things die, I think I still have a Scythian alive at this point. I go into the tank.
The tank? Remember, this is time turns.
Yeah, it is time turns, but I have 10 minutes to activate three models. So
that's true, I suppose.
So, but he actually thinks that I'm playing for dice down, because if dice down is called, I win at this point. I have two scenario points. He has zero.
Oh, okay.
However, I'm looking around and there's still a lot of people playing. Dice down's not going to get called anytime soon.
Yeah.
This works in my favor that he's concerned about it. So basically, after thinking and taking almost all 10 minutes, and it may have looked like I was playing for dice down at this point, just stalling, but I promise I wasn't. I even told him I wasn't, but obviously I could be lying. But what I actually, so, but in a way I want him to think I'm playing for dice down, because I want him to move Doomy up on the flag. This is the only way I win. So right now he's got Doomy behind the Creel stone, you know, safely protected from everything. So basically what I do is I use the Scythe and I position him to basically try and buy Saren a little time, and she blitzes to a forest on his side of the map and kind of chills there. Now my plan is basically to get to Doomy, tag him with a dagger, and hellfire him to death, because he's only got like 11 HP or something. I don't remember why he lost this HP, but he had. And hellfire will kill him. all day.
The tagging him with a dagger is important because it removes his her chance daggers to. Have. Yeah, it removes tough and it removes the transfers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's so good. Can't heal. Yeah. Can't transfer. So, her daggers have grievous wounds because I love Saren.
Why her daggers have grievous wounds, I have no
Saren
idea.
So much. Saren's amazing. So, my plan is to basically feel like he has to move up and start scoring points. And if he starts scoring points, I cannot stop him. Sorry, I'll stop tapping the table again.
Thank you.
So as soon as he moves up on that flag on his turn, he's going to score one on his friendly flag. And on his turn, he's going to score two because I have nothing to go over there contested. But I do have Saren nearby. So basically what Saren does, I basically position her where no matter where he goes on the flag, she's going to be able to walk 7 inches, throw her dagger 7 inches, and then hellfire him. And that's exactly what happens. So he moves Doomy up with 5 transfers. Saren walks over. Saren tags him with the dagger. I boost damage because I have nothing else to spend the fury on at this point because she's got 7. Boost 1 brings her down to 6. Boost 2 on the damage brings her down to 5, which is 3 for a hellfire with boosts on both sides. I tag him with the dagger, actually roll bananas damage, like a 15 or something. So a dice minus 5, it almost kills him with the dagger.
Down to 1?
It was like 3 or 4. It may not have been 15, but anywho. I tag him for a lot, and it's awesome, and I feel great. And then I hit him with a boosted hellfire. I boost a hit, which he's like a defense 13, I think. So
I thought trolls were, well, I guess the casters aren't 12s.
Oh, Doomy's squishy too. He's a 13, 15, I think.
Oh.
He's got abysmal stats. His saving grace is that he's in trolls, which brings him up to a 17, and then you can earthborn him up to a 19, which is reasonable. Saren tags him with the dagger and then hellfires and kills him. So I apologize, person. I really do promise I was not trying to play for time turns, but in a way I was because I was trying to get him to go up and get on the flag so Saren could kill him. And it was also a close thing, like Saren barely got in range with him because there was a Forsaken sort of blocking her walk path a little bit. But luckily Doomy is a medium base, and so she was able to see him.
Probably it was more an issue for the distance.
Oh yeah.
Speaking of that, I think there wasn't some dispute over the distance on that throw.
Yeah, so
called a judge on that.
I measured it and then he measured it and we both agreed it was in 7, so that's not really a judge call at that point.
Okay. Yeah.
And then after we had cleaned up again, or started cleaning up, and I had left and walked around. He measured it again and then thought that it was outside of 7. We had been cleaning up at that point, and she had been base to base with a model that had been moved at that point, so I wasn't willing to. That was far from a tournament.
Well, I mean, I guess if he already agreed.
It was a close thing, and I measured it, and I actually thought it was pretty well within 7. I remember looking at it and thinking that I have it by about a quarter of an inch. And then he measured it from his side, and he also agreed I had it. I mean, this is obviously a game-winning move at this point.
Sure, if he agrees, then, I mean, I guess during the game, then there's no need to call a judge.
So if he had wanted to, I really do honestly feel like it was in 7, too. So, but I apologize if he feels slighted in any way.
I'd feel slighted if I tabled you and then you killed me.
I came up with a plan and it worked. Yeah, I love Saren so much. She can do stuff like that, even with her inability to actually fight things other than Hellfire. Saren's great. Oh, I should mention that when Saren tagged Doomy with the dagger, Mold came over and attempted to one-shot her because protective fit triggered, but he missed her. He is mat 7 on a defense 16, which is not great. He rolled an 8, actually. He needs a 9 to hit at that point. Well,
could have been.
Yeah, it could have been. And he also would have been hard-pressed to one-shot her because she's at full HP, so she's...
I guess you technically had transfers.
He's dice plus 5.
Oh, you didn't have any transfer targets, though, did you?
Nothing to transfer to. He would have needed to roll like an 11 on the damage, but it could
have
happened.
That's not really that outside of... Well, it's not boosted.
No.
So yeah.
She's armor 14 and he's pow 19, I think, on that club.
I don't know.
So it's dice plus 5. He'd need to roll high. But it could have happened. Regardless, she had already tagged him with the dagger, so he's already grievous wounds, and then the Hellfire came in and killed him. Round 1 of Masters. I wrote these down and put them online so I remember stuff. I go up against Kurt, who is playing Butcher 1, Butcher 2, and Butcher 3.
I wanted to talk to you about this. I'm interested in your thought process of what... Tell us what list you brought.
So I put down Saren.
Right, but what list did you have in your...
Oh, so I had Lilith 3, I had Vale 2, and Saren.
Now, I know you've been playing Lilith 3 quite a bit recently.
Yeah.
Why did you pick Lilith 3 for your lineup, though? Because you had been playing Bethane for a long time.
Yeah, and I like Lilith 3 better against Signar. She's a real solid way to fight a gun line because of Windwall, honestly. She gets a great initiation, she's fast, and she's really good at killing things like gun mages. Got ride by attack, speed 9. She's also arguably the sturdiest of the Legion casters. Her defensive stats start out at 14, 16, But with escort, she goes up to a 14-18, and honestly, you just keep a shredder behind her, and she's always going to have the escort armor. And then that shredder also applies tenacity to her, and she is a 15-19 with transfers, which is actually really hard to kill.
That is pretty hard to kill.
She also does a legitimate amount of work with the three shots from a POW 12, RAT 8, magical bow, you know, the auto fire. Three automatic, and if she needs to, she can charge things too.
Plus, doesn't she, if she hits something with a bow, doesn't she get to cast a free spell?
She kills. She's got blood
boom. Oh, she got a kill.
Yeah, so okay. She has blood boom, the same thing Vlad one has. She's really good, and I don't think she gets enough credit. She also has a fantastic feat, especially against armies that are slow, because you can feat people at zones essentially,
or low model count armies too. Yeah, right,
definitely. And then I've got striders in that list to apply the feat. Striders are also just fantastic, especially with a caster who's offering them little to no support. Now, Lilith offers them the feat support, and that's about it.
Right, but Lilith is going to hit ideally three things with her bow for the feat. Yeah. Well, I mean for the feat purposes. Oh, yeah.
Things have to be close to each other because it is auto fire.
Oh, they have to be within two?
Yeah, they have to be within two of the initial target.
Okay.
So you are limited. You can't just apply it to three of the most important things and then run away with her, which is a common tactic. So you just apply it to three important things. Honestly, the list, she works really well. And my only issue with her is that she's a huge base. If she was on a small base, she would be...
You mean a large base? Because there's no cavalry that is lower than a large base, to my knowledge.
What? Well, yeah, yeah. So if she was on like a horse or something.
Right.
If she was Morvana 2 style, it would be great, but she's not. So, but there are some advantages, like her wind wall goes forever, so you can really cover a lot of stuff with it. Cover the support models. I play it with Forsakens, a single Strider Deathstalker. I mean, it's a solid list. And then I have the Saren and the Veil 2 lists.
Right, which you are using in the qualifier round.
So he's got Butcher 3, Butcher 2, Butcher 1. Essentially, my problem is that I do not want to play Lilith 3 against Butcher 3, who is a solid... He could drop Butcher 3 against Legion and have a real good game there. His Butcher 1 is very ranged heavy, so he's got a full unit of Winter Guard Riflemen. He's got the Nyss, and he's got Kayazi and a Clamjack running up the middle. And then Butcher 2's list is the Tier Force with...
Doom Reavers Forever and Alexia and some other things. Yeah.
Saren is really good against Butcher 3. She's really good against Butcher 2. And she's okay against Butcher 1. It's not the best because he's very ranged heavy.
He's very ranged heavy. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Because for him, he pretty much just drops Butcher 1 against you.
Yeah, but he could also drop Butcher 3.
Yeah, but you almost have to drop Saren.
Yeah, but he almost has to drop Butcher 1 at that point.
Exactly. And that's good for him, I would think.
Not actually, because all those guns only really do serious damage on the feat turn, and I'm essentially immune to Kayazi with the Blightbringer, because they don't have reach. So, and I can always apply Breaststealer to them if I want to. I feel like I've got good game, and I do if I didn't horribly screw this game up in multiple ways. And then roll badly to cap it off. So you could blame this game on dice, and I had a really good out to winning it. But if I played it better, I wouldn't have needed the dice in the first place. I could have just won normally. So I go second. I move quickly up the field. Well, he moves up, obviously. I blitz up the field. He goes. He peppers some shots into my stuff, namely killing. I think he gets some Strider Deathstalkers, actually, with the Valachev 3-inch move plus a 6-inch walk. Plus a big CRA. He gets some Strider Deathstalkers, and I think he also starts picking off.
Who had Valachev?
The Nyss.
Oh, the Nyss. Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah. That's a no-brainer at that point with his feet. But it's not going badly. And the Nyss are becoming a problem. I'm not focusing on them. I'm honestly killing more of the rifle core. Even though the Nyss may be a bigger threat, he's got them well protected with distance. And I have much more open targets at the rifle core. And the rifle core are also what he's using to put in the zone to attempt to get me to not score points. However, that fails. I kill everything in the zone. I move my stuff into the zone. Score, and then here's where I make a huge mistake, is I think that I can get a Scythian onto the Clamjack and ding it up a little bit.
I mean, you probably can, but it starts at armor 25, doesn't it?
It turns out, not only can I not put the Scythian onto the Clamjack, this puts it out of Saren's feet. So if we're talking about screw-up of all screw-ups, this is like where I'm pounding my forehead on the desk. But I still have game because I'm playing Saren against Kador, and she's really good against Kador. Huge screw-up. Basically, though, but the Clamjack doesn't have the world's greatest chance of killing...
A Scythian.
But Butcher does.
Yes.
So basically, he moves Butcher up, kills the Scythian, but he puts it in threat range of two angels to do this, and he camps a decent amount. I think it was like two or three. Well, I guess two or three is not a decent amount. But he puts Iron Flesh on Butcher and moves the War Dog up behind it. So he's effectively a defense 19 against angels, and a 13 on three dice is not great odds.
No.
He screwed up a little bit. He left an angel in a back arc. Not only did he leave this angel in the back arc, the angel with the charge can then charge Butcher, repulse him, which just knocks him into the ass of his Clamjack, and then moves the dog far enough away where he doesn't get the bonus anymore. So this angel now needs a 9 to hit it on a boosted armor-piercing strike that's going to do dice plus something. So I think he was camping 2, if memory serves, and...
That puts him to a 20. He's a 14, 20. 18.
Yeah, so he goes down to a 9, up to an 11. So dice plus 3. He's got 20 HP, I think?
Yeah, 20.
So with 2 Angelius...
I don't know why he has 20.
That's a real legit... Yeah, because he's Butcher. That's a real, real legit assassination run, and I can position a Scythian to be a follow-up piece. He's got nothing that can kill it, essentially. But there's only one problem. To do this charge with the initial Angelius, that puts me out of Saren's control feed, and he has positioned 4 Chaozi around Saren to stop her from moving. So, are you ready for brain fart number 2? Instead of just repulsing away the Chaozi, walking forward and trying to apply a breast stealer to Butcher, by the way, I really needed a 10 on 3 dice, and that takes the assassination from moderately difficult to downright assured. I could do that, but instead I decide to hellfire the one that's in the way in the lead. I boost to hit, so he's a defense 14. I need a 7 to hit on 3 dice, and I roll a 6. And then the game falls apart from there, essentially. This, the Angelius' charge, both of them whiff. They need 13, so that's not unreasonable at all. Actually, the Scythian, the following turn, attempts to follow up and brings Butcher down to 7 HP. Golf clap for Scythian. He nails one of the shots and rolls balls out on damage. But I lose. I lose because I played badly.
Kurt didn't play well. You just played badly.
Kurt did play well, too. He actually did. He did play really well. And his Nist placement was excellent. The Nist were a huge problem. I think he could have used his Chaozi a little bit better, but honestly, in the end, they did what he needed them to do, even if they didn't actually have the ability to do that.
But as long as he convinced you that they had the ability to do that, and you believed it.
I did. No. So he was excellent. He was also a really fun guy to play. He was so fun.
Yeah, Kurt was super sweet. No, he was a nice guy.
It was a great game. So even though I lost, I didn't feel awful. Round 2, Matthew Bunting. I wrote things down.
Crazy.
He's playing Kador too, but I've just played Saren. I don't feel like being locked out of Saren for the rest of the tournament, so I decide to drop Veil 2 because his 3 lists are Irisk 1, I think, or maybe it was Irisk 2. Yeah, one of the Irisks. Vlad 2 and P. Sorsha. I expect him to drop Vlad 2 or one of the Irisks. He drops Vlad 2. His Vlad 2 list is weird, but honestly not terrible against Legion, although it does not really go his way. He's got the Assault Commandos, which normally being super bad, are decent because he's immune to all my shooting. So.
Right.
He's got Cav in there. That didn't go well. The Ulans.
Okay.
You're right. You're right. The Spray Cav.
The Spray Cav is really good.
Especially Vlad 2.
Yeah.
But no, he's got normal Cav. He also has a Clamjack, the Reign of Death Clamjack of Doom. And then I think he has a little bit of a solo loadout. Essentially what happens is I kill everything and don't lose very much at all. Veil is amazing. So between Admonition, Occultation on my infantry, he's got Widowmakers in this list, but they're useless because I occultate my Legionnaires, so they don't have anything good to shoot. I basically move up to threat the zones. He moves up and has to get in the zone to stop me from scoring. I kill a lot of stuff, honestly. All of the Ulans end up dying to Ravagor and Angelius shots. Well, 3 of them die the first time, then 2 of them charge in to kill a Shredder, I think. Nothing important.
Those poor Shredders.
Poor Shredders. Anywho, they charge in. No, they charge in to kill the objective so he can start scoring. And he actually does score 2 points. He dominates that zone. But I have everything alive, so I move stuff into the zone and kill the rest of the Ulans, kill a chunk of their commandos, kill every single Widowmaker. Everything dies. And then he tries a long shot, but more legit assassination than I should have given him. Essentially, what he's got nearby, Veil sits in the zone. She's used her feet to kill some stuff, not really go for an assassination. I just used it to...
You used Veil's feet not for an assassination?
No, I used it to take my attrition game from assured to absurd. But she's got admonition and 3 transfers on her. He's got a Clamjack, 2 of the Chaozi Eliminators nearby, which managed to survive a Harrier, by the way, who auto-hit them and then did not manage to kill them, and then also managed to survive a Shredder, which is more likely because he has trouble hitting them. So these two have survived against all odds, but they're there. And then he's got some assault commandos in the middle. Basically, the assassination he goes for, some assault commandos take some pop shots at Vale 2, who's got, she does not have tenacity, actually. So she's just sitting at a 16-14. She actually kills one with her quick draw. That was fun. And then the remaining ones fail to even hit her because they need 11s. Poor assault commandos. He then moves the Clamjack over. She admonitions awake, and he puts a boosted rain of death into her because it affects models 3 inches away. And so she suffers a boosted pound 9, and he actually rolls bananas damage. I end up transferring that. So he's got two of his Chaozzi with charges to kill Vale. He needs to hit every single shot. So they're mat 9. She's defense 16. They need 7s. So he has to hit every single 7. So out of all 4 shots, if he doesn't hit that. And then he needs to kill me with essentially the weak shots. And she survives at a lot of HP. She's got like 7 or 8 at the end of the assassination run. He does have 1 transference though, because Vlad moves over into zone with transference to give them 1 more powerful shot. So
right.
It's more of an assassination run than I should have given him, and I should have been more careful, and I'm definitely going to learn from this mistake. It was not a great assassination. I put it at,
well,
like,
he could have
10%.
If he had transference up, then he could have boosted the hit.
No, he only had 1 transference.
Oh, gotcha.
He only with had everything 1 focus else. With everything else, he had to do to make this whole thing possible. But it's more of a shot than I should have given. I should have seen the 3-inch rain of death thing coming, and I maybe should have saved the admonition and just taken the more powerful rain of death and transferred that away, and then admonitioned away from one of the Chaos Eliminators, which would have made the assassination go from unlikely to impossible.
Right.
Yeah, that was a mistake. I need to think more carefully when I a game at the very end and I have admonition. But I ended up winning. And I had the game thoroughly won on attrition. He gave a real legit assassination run. I should also add that he played an interesting move. On the first turn, he popped his feet and ran a bunch of Doom Reavers forward, and I think he was counting on me not being able to kill the feet of Doom Reavers, and I was able to kill them very easily because Harriers. So
auto-hitting.
Well, Harriers, and, you know, enough. An Angelius came in and bought a boosted to hit on them, and I think they're only defense 16 with that feet up. So it was difficult, but I don't think it was as unlikely. Actually, a Ravagor drifted a shot onto one of the unboosted ones and created a nice little place for the... Oh, no, no. The previous turn, actually, a Ravagor... We're going backwards in time. I shouldn't do this. It's all going to be confusing.
It is going to be confusing.
I forgot to mention that at the start, but essentially he feeded turn 1 to try and put some difficult-to-kill Doom Reavers into me. He also had a charge lane on, like, a Harrier, and he had a charge lane on an Angelius, but it had admonition, so it walked away. So I don't know if that was the greatest use of his feat, but it was an interesting play and one that I didn't see coming, so... What was that? Round 3, I went up against Scott Latta, who is a circle player, and he was good. I think he won Crucible the first year, if memory serves. He might not have. Whatever. He was super friendly, though.
Yeah, he is a really nice guy.
He was bummed out because in round 1, he lost to one of his friends on the world's most unlucky assassination run. I think he put a Stalker and a Getarix onto P. Denny and she lived or something like that.
Seems very unlikely.
I think one of them had Wild Aggression. I'm not completely positive. I was just next door to that game and too caught up in doing a terrible job in my round 1. So we're both playing for fun. He drops Emorvana against me. I dropped Saren, and I'm locking myself into level 3 in the last round, which,
well,
surprise,
no,
doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that at the time. But I thought, I might as well just play more Saren, because I love Saren against Emorvana, and I'm not a huge fan of Lilith, because honestly, that feat is a lot less effective when they can just teleport. He plays, I get to go second, so I've got the scenario game going. Did I go second? I'm pretty sure it went second. Obviously, I have a great memory for this thing.
It's been 2 weeks or so by now.
2 weeks? No, it's been 3 weeks. 4 weeks? This was in March 2nd, and today is March 20th, so it's been 3 weeks.
Almost 3 weeks. Yeah.
Anywho, he plays Morvana 2. Essentially, what he does is he plays conservative with his Stalkers, which is the right move. He moves his Skinwalkers up my left flank, and he's playing a pretty standard Morvana double Skinwalker list. So he's playing the Reeves with the War Wolves. He's playing 2 Skinwalkers with all the teleporty stones he could ever want. And he's playing the Skinwalkers with some Gallows Groves, too.
So he's not playing the World Wrath?
No, he's not playing the World Wrath big tier, but I prefer this one anyways when I play Circle. So I think he's got a good list. So he moves obviously he's got a good list. He's playing Morvana too. But he moves the Skinwalkers up my left flank, which he moves centrally. He moves up his stones and the War Wolves, and he moves the Reeves at my right flank. Essentially, I put my guys forward, and I score the first scenario point by clearing off some Reeves. Actually, sorry, I should point out, he manages to charge some War Wolves into my Stalkers, needing 9s to hit my Strider Death Stalkers, and he hits both of them and kills them both. Maybe he needed more than that.
Good on you, Scott.
He's a bad person.
Great move.
We both admitted That was amazing dice. But don't worry, his dice karma come back to bite him. So essentially, I clear off the center flag, and I score a point for controlling it. And then his plan is to go up, clear
it. What's the scenario?
And then he scores a point. It's three flags.
Oh, is it? Okay.
No, sorry, I didn't say that. I just said that like you should know it. Jesus, three flags. Anyways, it's three flags. So then his plan is to move up, basically clear a Harrier and a Shredder who are near the flag, and then he can score his points. When he moves his stones over, he decides to use his Stone Warden that's on one of the units of stones to kill a Harrier. He back arcs, he wasn't in the back arc to start out with, but he puts a magic spell on him and he plops the Stone Warden right next to the Harrier. And essentially what happens is the spell drifts a little bit over and lands directly on the Stone Warden and the Harrier. It does no damage to the Harrier and one-shots the Stone Warden. So I think it needed like an 11 or something or a 10 to kill him. Anywho, it does. So this is fantastic because now the stones can no longer control the scenario. So basically, he decides to use his feat to revive a few Reeves, the Warwolves, and the Stone Warden, essentially to give him that point. And then he uses the Reeves along with big CRAs to put some serious damage onto an Angel with the Warwolf chart. He also revives some Gallows and sticks them in annoying places. But I feel great now because now I have saved my feet. So on my next turn, I think he's actually expecting me to pop my feet, and I don't. I attempt to clear the zone. I apply Breaststealer to the Skinwalkers on the far side, and I use a Succubus, actually, to contest the flag that actually is staying out of range of the Skinwalkers because they can no longer charge and are speed -2, which makes them very sad. And so basically, I save my feet and attempt to clear the stones off, but then my dice decide to crap out and I can't kill two stones or something like that.
They are harder to kill than you might think. I mean, Armor 18, five boxes is pretty good.
I had a lot of things to kill them. Like, they should have died. There were some Angelius shots that did nothing.
Dice -6?
If memory serves, I should have killed it, and I didn't. I might be wrong.
I guess if you're looking for 11s.
Yeah.
Oh, you said shots. I'm assuming you're shooting with the Angel's gun.
What? Yeah, I think that's what I was doing. And
yeah.
I clumped backwards a little bit and kept Asaiadean off towards the Skinwalker flag. Because the flag with the Skinwalkers is the one that stayed, and the one next to the Reeves disappeared.
Right.
All things I should probably include in a sane and followable battle report. Essentially,
we'll have none of that.
Essentially, I managed to save my feet around, which gives me a pretty convincing scenario advantage and a undeniable attrition advantage, because I end up killing a wolf, a stalker, before he can really do anything, since I save my feet for the following turn, pop it, move my guys way far forward, and then he's got nothing to touch them. But the wolves stay pretty much alive, and I end up getting a stalker, which is great, and scoring more points, which basically forces him to take Morvana and move her onto the far flag, so my left flank, in order to start dominating that to get ahead in scenario, because I've got the attrition game pretty well nailed down now. However, I don't have too much that I can put in that over by that flag that the Skinwalkers are not going to be able to kill, even without charges. I decide to go for an assassination, which is really
surprise,
likely.
Surprise. And Morvana, he's going to assassinate.
She has like 6 HP or something. So actually, Saren walks over, who's in range, throws her dagger. So I had thought about this in advance. Thank you. Saren is also able to get at Morvana no matter where she goes on the flag. Saren walks over. She tags Morvana with the dagger, who is on a hill. So she's moderately difficult to hit. I think she's a 15 defense?
I don't know.
I think she's a 15. I think she went up to a 17 and I needed 10s to hit. With 3 daggers, I'm probably going to hit one of them. And then I had a debatable Angelius charge then and a definite Angelius shot that would have been on the hill. Essentially, I walk over, tag her with the dagger. The dagger one-shots her.
Really?
She only had like 6 HP.
Still, though.
I had another.
It's like, what, a POW 7 or something like that?
It's a POW 8, I think.
POW 8.
Maybe it's, I think so. Anyway.
You're probably like dice -8 or something on this.
It was something.
So you need
like 14s.
Like
an 11. No, I needed like an 11 or something.
Okay.
It wasn't much. She had been cutting herself to reroll attacks and damage and stuff. And be an annoying, terrible person.
As Morvana often does.
I hate Morvana.
And we have with us today.
My name's Ben. You might know me as Rent.
Yep. Rent is with us today.
Yep, and he crushed dreams at Mace West, so we got him on here to talk about that. Actually, regardless of whether you dream crushed at Mace West, I wanted to get you on anyways. So it just turns out that it's good that you crushed dreams at Mace West, because now I had 2 good reasons to get you on.
Happy accident.
Indeed. Some of those games were really close, too, from what I gather. I didn't, you know, playing, so I didn't really get to see much of them. If you want, you can go ahead and get started on your round one.
Round one, I was playing against a Protectorate player. Krios Pop and Drop, he was running. We decided we didn't really like killing each other, so when he went for his assassination run, he very kindly had his three-shot AoE guy be like half an inch out on my caster. I returned the favor by not killing Krios with the Axiom. He decided to one-up me again by not killing me with some charging Errant. Unfortunately, at that point, the Axiom did manage to kill Krios.
Well, I mean, unfortunate for him.
Well, yes.
Well, they didn't want to kill each other.
Yeah, it's true. They were having a gentleman's game, apparently.
Exactly. It was a shame to bring it to an end so crassly.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'll actually ask you, what list were you playing there? It sounds like you were playing Convergence.
Yes, I was playing a Iron Mother list and an Aurora list.
Awesome.
I guess we should ask you what was in your lists. Just, you know, the listeners may want to know that at some point.
I suppose they might. See if I can remember. Iron Mother, Prime Axiom, Cypher, Monitor, a unit of Eradicators, two units of Angels, the Accretion Servitors, and the Optifex Directive. I think that was the Iron Mother list. And then the Aurora list had a Cypher, a Monitor, two full units of Reciprocators, a full unit of Eradicators, two units of Angels, the Accretion Servitors, and I believe the Elimination Servitors as well, and a Steel Soul Protector.
Sounds like a lot of
those
beef.
Were the lists.
They were beefy lists when you put them down on the table. Yes. I was like, well, if I run into this guy, I'm going to definitely have to drop Siege to just punch those heavy infantry in half.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have the opportunity, so.
Round two,
I believe, was against Liam. He was playing Magnus II. He managed to feat while he was dominating the zone and did so in a way that I pretty much couldn't get anything in there.
That sounds like Liam.
Fortunately, I had killed his Gorman, so he couldn't block line of sight to Magnus. Unfortunately, there was Bullet Dodger up, so if I missed anything, he would move. So since I was going to lose anyway, I just decided to go for it. And Cypher shot with an aimed flare, then a Monitor shot aiming, then Mother managed to get a shot not aiming, and then the Prime Axiom backed up so that he could get the harpoon shot on him, and miraculously every single one of those attacks hit, so he never moved, got pulled in, and Axiom made a caster.
Well, you know what Jason Flanzer says, when you think you're going to lose, just win. So it sounds like that's exactly what you did.
Yep.
So I mean, as long as you don't miss any of those attacks, he's still in all your gun ranges, so you just don't miss any attack, and you're good.
Mm-hmm. I've done the math since then, and it was like a less than 40% chance just to get all those hit, so good amount of luck right there.
On each attack or cumulative?
Total.
Oh, okay. So
yeah, it was during Mother's feat, right?
Each one of those shots was like a coin flip. It wasn't actually Mom's feat turn. That had been the turn before to clear out infantry. Oh, yeah, so I was boosting fives and boosting aimed sevens.
Oh, okay. So they were high percentage shots, at least.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a little bit better than a coin flip each time, but...
Well, I mean, boosting a five...
Four or five coin flips.
Well, boosting a five is much better than a coin flip. Even boosting a seven is better than a coin flip.
Oh, no, I was needing nine.
Oh, okay.
The five was my actual mat score, or rat score.
Oh, gotcha. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. He needed nines. He had a five.
I see. All right, well, it worked out for you, so what can you say?
Yep.
Kind of can understand our difficulty in dealing with Liam in our meta, because that's basically what he does to us. He locks us all out of scenario and just says,
yeah,
come get some. And
it was rough.
Yeah, it's he plays a solid game. It's really hard to beat him because he plays the scenario game so well with those mercenaries. But
yep,
you're able to do it, so good on you. Going into round three?
Round three, I ended up facing my driver for the day. He was playing Denegra 1. At this point, I found out that it was a divide and conquer tournament, so I had to bust out Aurora or be locked in on the next round. So I busted out Aurora, and he had me dead to right. Except he ran out of time before I did.
Yeah, I was going to say, that game looked really intense. I had finished my round three really early and got some dinner, because that was the dinner round, if I remember correctly. And I was like, oh, it's time for food. So I got lucky assassination, needing to roll hard nines on two dice, and went to dinner early. I was like, one way or the other, I'm not doing well in this tournament. So I'm either going to at least get out of here and get some dinner or win and get some dinner and call it a round. But then when I came back, your game was really, like, it was intense. Like, everything was in the middle of the board. Both casters were in play. I mean, I was like, I didn't even know who was winning, because it was hard to tell, because you had all those shields up guys running around.
Yep.
You had Aurora going in there doing work. I was like, woo.
Bottom of two, he had an assassination run on me that left me with like 6 health left. Top of 3, I returned the favor, left Denegra with about 6 health left. Then they both ran away for a few turns, came back. Ended up, I had something like 39 kill points. He had 51.
Yeah, when you ran out of time? Yeah, it was. I mean, you didn't have much left because I think he started killing off the last few models that you had in the zone on his turn, and then when he ran out of time, so.
Yeah, he started his last turn with like 11 seconds left.
Well, you didn't have that much left on yours either. I think you had less than 2 minutes or maybe only a few seconds yourself. Yeah,
right about 2 minutes.
Yeah, it was, like I said, it was a close game. So, but I think he hadn't been playing too many games recently because of work or something like that. So he was a little rusty.
He's had about 4 months off, more or less.
Yeah, so if he could have spent a little less time in the tank, it would have been the difference there. So, it looked like a really good game.
But it was. Fortunately, he didn't though, so I won.
And then your final round, I think you played Simon from Asheville.
Simon.
Yeah.
Yes, this game was videotaped. I don't know how that turned out. I don't know when it's going to turn up, but it'll be there at some point.
Those Asheville guys like their videotape, so I'm sure they'll get it out there.
He was playing Circle. He went with Kruger 2. I went with Iron Mother. The first 2 or 3 turns, Druids were being obnoxious and protecting his entire army from my gun line. Kruger went into the zone, popped his feet to score a point. I kept jamming stuff in, but it was not enough to keep him from killing it and getting another point again. But in the meantime, my Axiom slowly started working its way over to that zone. Over the course of 3 turns, it killed Warpwolf Stalker, Megalith, and Getarix.
Sounds like it earned its points.
Yeah, by the time it killed Getarix, it was in the zone, and he had 4 control points. So he started going for my zone. He sent the unit attachment of the Shifting Stones in, because I only had a Servitor in that zone.
Right.
Missed the shot. The deviation went too far to catch it. So he didn't get that point then, but by that point, the Axiom was close enough that it could just drag in Kruger.
Right. If he had killed that Servitor, would he have won the game?
I can't remember if it was that turn or the next turn that he ran the Gorax in, because the unit attachment for the stones was all that was left. Since that unit was below half strength, he couldn't control it by himself. But if he got the Gorax in that turn, then yes, he would have.
Gotcha. Well, I guess if he could have got Kruger in it, if he could have killed the Servitor and then literally ran Kruger into the zone, he could have got the domination if there was nothing else contesting, and then that would have won, I suppose. But I didn't see the board position that game. You know, I was playing my game, I think.
I'm not sure Kruger would have had the distance because he was kind of on the far side of the other zone.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's possible.
It was close nonetheless. So it sounds like pretty much all of your games were down to the wire, really.
Yep.
But that makes for a
Mother doesn't do quick wins.
Yeah. It makes for a good tournament run, though. It makes everything real exciting.
Yep.
So are you planning on going to the actual Mace now that you're qualified for the Mace Invitational?
It's possible. I need to look at a calendar, see where it falls in relation to War Machine Weekend and Thanksgiving.
I believe it falls the week after War Machine Weekend.
Yeah, I think it's the week after.
And then, you know, of course, then you got another week in between, and then I think you have Thanksgiving. Or maybe Thanksgiving is it the third week for Thanksgiving or the last week for Thanksgiving?
I think it's the third.
Right now, I'd say it's maybe a 50-50.
50-50?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, see, here, this may be the plan. Plan may be that we drive to War Machine Weekend, pick up Renth on the way.
Cart him on back.
And then cart him back to Mace for the Invitational after that.
I will do what I can. If I can convince a group of people to go up, that's for sure going to happen. It's a matter of convincing enough people, really.
Well, what you got to do is you got to make sure that they go out there and get into some Mace qualifying tournaments and qualify for Mace. And that way they're all qualified for Mace and then they all have a leg in the race, you know, so that way they have a genuine interest in going there and winning the prize. I think Mace, we generally give a free ticket to Gen Con, I think, is the prize for Mace. So it's not a bad prize.
And that being said, who's your PG in your area?
He is.
I'm one of them. We also have Agamemnon. He's the guy with all the Signar. And we've got Law of Thirds.
Okay.
We've got 3 in the area.
We could just talk with the organizer. You could talk with the organizer and you could run a Mesa Invitational where you're at. Could drum up interest.
That's right. I mean, you could probably run several depending on how many. I mean, you can run
depending on how many stores. It's 1 per store.
Yeah.
Okay. I will definitely see about doing something like that because I have a store that wants to do something big like every other week, every other month. So we can just make that happen probably.
Yeah, and Mace isn't until November, so you can run qualifiers all the way pretty much until the week before Mace. So as long as you just get it done before then, I don't think it'll be a problem. You know, now that I'm putting words in the mouth of are press gangers. I don't know how their plans work out for it. So
it's not just press gangers. There's an organizer for the tournament. So
oh, okay. Well, I don't know how many people they're planning on having in the Mace Invitational is the thing. I don't know if they're planning on it being 16 or 32 or what.
Yeah, but we always have slots, so.
That's true. We'll let them figure that out. We'll yep. just. We'll. It's yeah, better to ask for forgiveness than it is to ask
beg
for
permission. Ask for permission.
Yeah. So.
Send me the name of who I need to get in touch with, and I will get in touch with them.
Not a problem. I'll do that after the cast.
Cool. Thank you.
Not a problem. So you enjoyed it at Mace West?
Yes.
Did you meet any cool people?
Everyone there I met was cool. That's typically how War Machine events go.
Did you? You didn't play Joe then, did you? I thought you did, but I guess you didn't.
Damn.
Going to not have.
Bus.
Well, he said he wanted us to name drop him on the podcast, so I'm just doing him a favor.
Oh, okay. So you're like, oh, you met a whole bunch of cool people. You must have not met Joe.
No, Joe was a really cool guy at the tournament. Don't you throw me under the bus. He was really cool. He was passing out alcohol. We were like, I don't know if you
oh,
heard.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure I met him then.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Alcohol.
Well, Chris was like, yeah. So this is the way this tournament's going to go. It's going to be one shot regardless and two shots if you lose. Needless to say, Chris had a good time at the tournament. But he's our local press ganger, and he rarely gets to play in these events. So it was a real treat for him to come out to Mace West, where somebody else was doing the tournament running, and he could actually play for a change. So he really had a blast. And I'm sure it's the same for you, because I imagine you probably play in probably organize a lot of your events and therefore don't get to play in them.
We've got three, so we try and hand off on a fairly consistent basis, but not everyone's that lucky.
Right. And it seems like y'all are pretty good up there. I mean, I haven't seen anybody from Tennessee, but both, you said you're round three, it was you and your driver. So obviously you both were 2-0 at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And the game was really close. So it seems like either of you could have made it to the top table had you not had to play each other, was kind of where I was going. But so do you have like a lot of people in your area? What's your meta like?
We've got about 30 people who know how to play and play from time to time. We've got about 10 people who you can count on to show up about 50% of the time. And then there's 4 or 5 who are always around.
Now, the other guy that was playing Kador, I think his name was Chris. Yes. Chris?
Chris, yes.
And then the guy that drove with you, what was his name?
Caleb.
Are the three of you the three out of like the 4 or 5 that are you can always count on to be there?
Once Caleb recovers from his work thing, it'll move up to 5 or 6. But
gotcha.
Me and Chris are pretty much consistent show ups for things. Daughter of Frankenstein was going to make it up, but dental issues that morning.
Yeah, you can't mess with those dental issues. I'll tell you, they'll just
put you down.
They'll put you down. I think both my roommate and I, both Will and I, we know about that.
Oh, yeah.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about, Rinth? You got things going on in your area that you wanted to call any attention to, or do you want to plug anything?
Sure. I believe it's May 11th. Game On in Chattanooga is having a Who's the Boss. We have a wheel. We have all the casters. It's going to be a good time.
If it was closer, I'd be there.
I understand.
I love me some Who's the Boss. And I know Andy would be there, too, because he loves Who's the Boss. Will doesn't like Who's the Boss, so he wouldn't go.
Since we have the wheel and everything now, it's going to happen more often, I bet.
I bet. Although, it seems odd that... how does that work? Because when new casters get released, do you just divide up the wheel to smaller sections, or what?
Agamemnon made this wheel, so it has 340-some slots.
Okay.
So we're covered until we get about twice as many casters as we have right now.
So next year.
Maybe. I mean, they'd have to slow down a little bit, but yeah. And then it's actually big enough that he can do multiple tiers if he feels the need to do so.
Oh, that's sweet.
That is really good. And you guys, are you playing with the rules for Double Cross and all those other things as well, or just...
Yes, we are.
And is this a charity event? Because I believe Who's the Boss is a charity event, or at least it's intended to be a charity event.
Oftentimes it is a charity event. I think this time around we're just trying to get the word out to the local area, which is like 4 states at this point, that we have it. It's a thing that you can borrow, come on down and play. So it'll be used charity-wise at some point.
That's sweet. And what are your plans this year for War Machine? What events are you planning on going to?
I pretty much, for the past 4 years, have gone to War Machine Weekend. So I'm currently trying to make that happen again this year. That's about the only thing I get out to, though, because everything else is just too expensive.
I can understand that, believe me. The only thing that I know for sure, well, I say for sure, that we're going to or definitely have plans to go to is, as in terms of big conventions, is GigaCon down in Atlanta. I don't know how easy that would be for you to get to. Yeah. It's not too bad.
And I suppose the ATC counts as a thing. It's being held practically in my backyard this year, so I've got no reason not to go.
Right. So there you go. So you're planning on going to that, and then, of course, War Machine Weekend. If we can drag you out for Mace, we'll do that too, right?
Yes.
I don't know if you have any, like, SOs or anything like that, but Mace is a full gaming convention, so I know what Will does. He brings his wife, and she has a lot of fun playing in the role-playing games and the board games and things like that while he plays War Machine. And so that really works out well for him, and that way both people can have fun. They can still, you know, enjoy their time together at the convention while not necessarily being next to each other at all times, but each person can have their own fun and then, you know, still go out to eat or still do the things that, you know, they can do for their relationship as well. So something to consider
hotel
for me.
Sex.
Do what?
You're talking hotel sex.
Yeah, well, that too. I mean, there's hotel sex, there's party sex, you know, you get enough alcohol because usually there's some sort of after party where there's liquor involved.
Em and I don't go to parties.
So they have sex when I fall asleep, or sometimes not when I fall asleep.
When you're not in the room.
When I'm not in the room.
Yeah, that's true.
When I'm asleep.
What, given the chainsaw you bring?
Yeah, no, you don't have to worry about waking me.
All right. So you got any other events coming up?
That's as far out as we've planned right now. Back in February, we had a Screw You TempleCon event. Managed to draw 30 players. So nice. we're planning a What's a Lock and Load. And I didn't want a Gen Con anyway. A bitter celebration of the fact that we can't be at the big conventions.
That's fantastic.
I really ought to try to see if we can find some sort of middle ground in South Carolina or Georgia that we can get a bunch more people to some of these types of events to make something out of it.
It's tough to coordinate sometimes.
It is. I definitely agree with you there. But I think it was worth trying out anyways. It may take a year or two to get it together. But if you get like 20, 30 people, that's pretty decent, I think. We'll look forward to talking to you and seeing you again in the near future.
Yep.
All right. Well, this is going to be the Gun Bunny signing out.
All right. This is Will.
This is Keith.
And we've been sitting down with Brent.
Jesus Christ! I warned you.
We better not risk another frontal assault. That rabbit's dynamite.